Hi, I'm Dominique for the blog Music, Art, Culture. Thank you for listening. Today's episode is very special. We're talking to a local educator. He's going back for his master's and he is actively in the process of selecting his PhD program. So what we're going to do is dive into what that means for him. Not just the process of filling out applications. No, we're actually going a bit deeper. Why he's passionate about the work and what he intends to contribute to the overall body of research. Yeah, I guess that's what you do at that level on the PhD end of it. It's all about research, how you can connect to communities, what you can provide as a sustainable body of work, and essentially, what your passion is able to contribute, in this case, to music. And believe it or not, I didn't realize all of the dynamics that went into pursuing music on such a high-end level, but I will say that the conversation with our guest host today, Ontario, was very enlightening. Over the process of the day's events, which was a lot of fun. It was a full day. I regrettably did not incorporate our entire conversation. But I guess there's some things you have to keep for yourself. But don't fear. I got all the good stuff on tape. And that's what I'm going to play back. It's always a pleasure to sit with locals in our community that are actively willing to not just contribute, but give back in a way that empowers young people and allows people to connect, especially through the arts. So make sure that you head over to our Twitter page at MACEF Public Arts to like, share, tweet, follow, and keep up with the conversation. And we'll be sure to post our link for our Apple Podcasts as well, but you can also check us out on Anchor. That's right, anchor.fm/musicartculture. And you can hear more episodes on the blog Music Art Culture, but today we're focused on Ontario. So without further ado, check it out. And thanks for listening. Thank you for meeting with me today, Ontario, just to talk a little bit about education, inspiration, and how you see yourself contributing as an educator in music. Okay, so you are from Louisiana. When did you come out to California?
I was in elementary school when we came here.
Okay. So, but right now you're doing your master's and your MBA, right?
Yes, that is correct.
So, how do you feel about that process?
Wow. School is a process. I mean,
first off, what did you get your BA in? Let's go all the way back. What did you get your BA in?
My bachelor's is in theater.
Okay, in theater, performance theater?
Yes, performance.
Okay, actor.
Sure.
What is your favorite character role? He just keeps laughing. Get out the words, Ontario.
You know, that's been so long ago, but I really was inspired by Anna Deavere Smith.
Okay.
When she did Fires in the Mirror and Twilight in Los Angeles, the way that she, you know, went by the process of studying all of those people that she interviewed, and then she became those people on stage. And as one person on the stage, to embody each of those people, not just, you know, characters in terms of, you know, something that somebody else wrote, but she really became these people. And to me, that was like, wow, this is really acting, and that's something that I want to do. So that's why I studied theater.
Okay, now I'd never heard of that actress until now. So how'd you find out about her? Is that like black and white movie era? Is that like 60s, 50s?
No. Anna Deavere Smith is a playwright and actress.
Okay.
And she did Fires in the Mirror.
Fires in the Mirror.
Which I think took place either in the early 90s or late 80s. But there was a Brooklyn Crown Heights. There was like some unrest there.
Oh.
And
so there's historical significance to all of this.
Yes. Yeah, so it was a event that really happened. And then she went in and she interviewed the people about what happened in that situation. And then she made a play about it in a one-woman show. And she became all the people that she interviewed in that show, and telling a story from a Jewish mother's standpoint, a Black mother's standpoint. She became like a teenage Black boy. And oh. She became all these people. And then there was Twilight in Los Angeles, which was based on the 92 riots.
Wow.
And she did the same thing. She came in and she talked to people, and she was everybody from like Al Sharpton, I believe, to like just the neighbor down the street. So she invited all these people, and she told the story based on her interviews with them. And it was both, I believe, aired on PBS, and that's how I found out about it.
And got introduced to her body of work. That's amazing. I mean, that's some really dynamic kind of dialogue, I could only imagine, because, I mean, the LA riots, I was in, the second grade when that happened. So, and I just remember when it happened, so much craziness, because I'm from LA, so it was like literally half the street was kind of like inaccessible.
Not just half that, the but there was fire everywhere. There
fires, smoke, looting, black broken smoke, glass.
Buildings were burned down.
Looters, police presence excessively.
Not just police presence, but there was also National Guard in their tankers rolling down Crenshaw.
And people were trying to like actually go to work, go to school, and go to the grocery store, and some of that like was damn near impossible and took half a day. But it's just really interesting. So, wow, I just got a nice little thorough education. I'm going to have to look her up myself. But, okay, so you went into theater. You wanted to be an actor, a thespian, if you would. And then you move over into music.
I didn't necessarily move over into music. I've always had an interest, an equal interest in music and performing in theater on the stage. So there really isn't one for me above the other. It's all a means of expression and communication.
But you also were a music teacher, or are a music teacher. I mean, that says a lot, because for one, you're patient, okay? Two, you know what you're talking about, which is great, because a lot of music teachers don't really know what they're talking about. They have a lot of passion and not a lot of anything else. But I've actually seen you with some of your younger students, and you do have that passion, and you are able to bring out that energy in them that makes them want to do more than just learn the notes, but also wants them want to create an expectation or an experience for people who are able to interact with them. So you don't need to play yourself down there, sir. But let's talk master's and PhD program now. So did you always see yourself wanting to go to college? Or how did that come about as far as wanting to pursue past your BA and moving into your master's and also the PhD program?
When I was in the fifth grade, I was I gained acceptance into this program called the I Have a Dream Foundation. And it was through random selection. They would choose a school district in a low, high needs area. Namely, at that time, it was South Central or Watts is where they were heavily concentrated in helping children. And they would go to the school district and say, this is what we want to do. We want to help children have a pathway to college. And so that school district would pick a school, and then the principal would pick one or two classes just based on how many kids they would accept. And then they would track those kids through after school programs, and at that point give them a scholarship to college upon graduation. So, but even prior to that, I have college graduates in my family, so it was always like an understood that, you know, college isn't a viable way to be able to gain employment and upward mobility. So I kind of always understood that.
So you always had like a natural homegrown respect for education and the opportunities that kind of can come from that, that kind of knowledge is power base of empowerment.
Yes, that knowledge is power, but also that you could go to, you had to go to do some type of schooling and get a skill set to be viable in the employment world.
Okay. So moving into the master's and to your PhD, what exactly are you studying?
So at this time, I am near completion of a master's of arts in music and a MBA at Cal State LA.
Okay, and what would you like to do maybe 10 years from now?
10 years from now, wow. Well, hopefully what I will be doing is some type of performing, even if it's not at a professional entertainment avenue, whether I feel that my education has prepared me as a scholar to be better equipped to lead in my church as a musician, or to lead as a community leader in the arts. So it's not just about being a professional in the entertainment world. You know?
It's about creating a holistic experience for you that incorporates community and has like a homegrown feel as to where your knowledge is feeding back into the core, the center of what represents you and the people that surround you, and kind of paving it forward. Is that something that really gives you the fuel to pursue it?
Yeah, that's one thing, but also like we're sitting here in Inglewood, and many cities have some type of you know, program where they're supportive of the arts, where they'll have a jazz combo come in,
okay,
and play, you know, in front of City Hall or in front of the library. But it takes people who, you know, have some type of understanding about the arts and even business to, you know, be champions of those programs and to, you know, either run them or see to it that they're funded. So it's not, again, it's not just about the entertainment world aspect, but music leadership in the community that I live in.
So I like that take on it, because it does to a larger degree require people to kind of dig deeper and look outside of the things that they kind of already kind of identify as the want, the what's me, the what's mine, what do I want, you know, 5 years, 2 years, 10 years, whatever that is. And then it really sounds to me as though you're focused on legacy, you know, what's left after I'm gone, what's left, not even just, you know, like when you're no longer here, but, you know, when you leave the city, when you leave the state. It sounds as though you're more interested in creating a foundation that people can unify under by using those, you know, those common base skills or talents, those common interests, and really building bridges and just kind of cultivating communities and taking culture a step further by just creating something that's really homegrown and ingrained that really feeds itself.
Well, and that's the whole point of, you know, having an education. When you do a master's program, especially if it's not so much a professional degree, you're expected to write something. You're expected to write a thesis, and at the PhD level, you're expected to write a dissertation, which sets the tone for the work that you will do as far as a researcher, education, leader. So, like, for me, my project for my master's degree is I'm looking at the music of America, particularly early America, and the divergence between what is considered white music and what's considered black music, and how the two have similarities, but why did this have to be? Like, we know about racism, we know about slavery, but for the white America to have its Christian songs is very different in a way than
standard Mahalia Jackson type gospel.
Well, that, and they can even take the same songs, and it's a different experience based on who's singing it.
Now, explain to me, what is a white gospel Christian song? What is, like, I mean...
Well, I would say it like this.
Because I kind of thought some of them were universal. I mean, where does Give Me Jesus fall in to
well,
all
Give
of
Me
that?
Jesus is a spiritual.
Okay.
But you could take some of the standard anglicized hymns and...
Well, give me an example, like, of a song...
If you listen to the Gaither family,
okay,
or their music, you will hear it sung in a certain style.
Okay,
and you will hear things that may even sound similar. Okay, you might hear this movement from a 1-4 chord that sounds reminiscent of something that black gospel musicians would do, but then on the other side, there's something totally different. But I'm not only looking at that aspect of it.
Well, break it down for us, Ontario.
Well,
give us an example.
So my project will include sacred songs, but it also will include songs like patriotic songs. So we have the Star Spangled Banner, that is the national anthem of this country.
Okay.
However, there's a Negro national anthem, or you could say African American national anthem.
Very true.
Why do we have that? So that's part of what my research will explore. Is why do we have this music that's not just different in performance style, but different in context? Why is it that people are upset, certain people are upset about the kneeling in the football game?
Yes.
But then they don't understand the whole reason of why that person is kneeling in the first place. And that same reason why we would have a kneeling in a football game is the same reason why we have a Negro national anthem.
That is a very clear, concise explanation of two different styles of music based on experience, culture, and in some cases, what it means to be an American.
Right, and so to be an American, to be a citizen of this country, is shaped by our culture. And if we have different experiences that shape the way that we see the world, that's expressed through our music, through our performance styles. You can kind of track.
And this is for your master's.
Yes.
This is a thesis for your master's.
Yes.
And your master's is in music.
Yes. So
okay.
I'm looking at that from a musical perspective. If I was studying theater, I could take it and do the same thing for theater and say, what developed on the so-called Chitlin' Circuit, and how did that speak to black people in a way that it would not speak to white people, and why do we have this difference?
Now, explain the Chitlin' Circuit for those who don't get it. So basically, that's kind of like, would that be the equivalent of a low-end theater experience, smaller budget, something that might take place in the back of a restaurant or
it could have been all
at a
those
school
things.
Play, house?
It could have been all those things, but basically what it comes down to is that during segregation, black people could not perform in white venues. In many instances, they could not. So, and not only could they not perform in certain, in many white venues, black patrons or audience members or theater goers, whatever it is, they couldn't go in. So if you had, like, when Lena Horne was playing for white audience, she could play for the white audience, but she had to walk through the kitchen. If she went down to the South and played at the black venue, she didn't have to walk through the kitchen. She could walk through the front door, okay? So
the Chitlin Circuit was brought out through segregation.
And it was a place where black performers could perform for black audiences.
Okay.
And even in that, you get a difference in the, the entertainment setting that would be different than if you were at a white restaurant performing in a nightclub.
Okay. So thank you for clearing that up, because, of course, you know, some of the stuff that you talk about, I'm aware of. Some of it, I'm not. The Chitlin Circuit, I was, but we also want to fill it in for our listeners to make sure that we're not leaving them behind.
And Chitlin Circuit is, in some ways, is a demeaning term that, you know, is the way white people would explain, that's what, you know, black folks over there do, you know?
Yeah, because everybody doesn't eat chitlins. It's technically intestine, isn't it? Like, boiled over intestine? Or is it fried? I don't know. It's not my thing. I've heard that they're kind of stinky, actually, if you don't clean them properly.
Well, okay. Well,
is that true? I mean, it's intestine. It's pig intestine.
It is true. And you can fry them. There are people who fry them and swear that they're great. And you can boil them. Most people know them as from being boiled. But you do have to clean them, and you have to clean them very well.
Yeah, and if you don't know what chitlins is, then it's pretty close to menudo. So it's all the same. It's pig intestine. So do you know what happens to your intestine? FYI, that's like where all the food goes to break down, right? True story. That's what it is. I mean, that's what I thought. That's how the food breaks down, right? All in the intestine. And then it comes out of the intestinal tract into the excretion of the waste that comes out through the rectum.
Yeah, that's enough.
So that's the Chitlin Circuit and the story of...
But these people were not... And you can see why it could be, you know, a derogatory term.
Right. The story behind the pig. But I've truly enjoyed this conversation, Ontario. Thank you for indulging with us here on the Blog Music Art Culture and hanging out with me on this beautiful day here in Inglewood. We had actually a nice little afternoon, right? Tried a local restaurant out, vegan food, FYI.
Afternoon with you.
Yes. So if you all are ever in the area, head over to Stuff I Eat. I would recommend it, because there's not a lot of stuff I eat, but I like their menu. It's healthy, it's flavorful, and their spicy is really seasoned well, so you don't feel like you're just snacking on like spicy hot stuff. So something to take in. But Ontario, PhD, talk to us about the PhD.
What would you like to know about it?
Well, I don't know. What made you want to do a PhD and a master's at the same time? How about that? Let's start there, Superman.
Well, they're not exactly at the same time. I will finish the master's in May, and I'm currently applying to PhD programs.
Oh, okay.
For me, is that, like I was saying about my project, is based on research. And at the academic level, there are just not enough people of color who are contributing to this body of research. The research that universities put out, you know, they set a standard, they affect what we know, and then it also has implications on the generations who are coming to study behind us. So right now, usually when you're doing research, you want to find, you know, current sources to inform you. And when it comes to black music, especially whether it's classical, especially with classical or jazz, there isn't a lot of black people who have the PhDs who are writing about this. So in essence, there's somebody else telling maybe some aspect of our story who don't look like us or have our experiences. So I want to be able to use my research to further the understanding of the black cultural experiences through music and art.
And what type of genres do you want to include? Are we talking classical black pieces that have to do with like the spiritual aspect? Are we even including rap and some of the other genres that have broken off?
Black classical musicians who have composed didn't always compose solely for spirituals. It was a base of inspiration for many. But they also have, like, Florence Price, who she has works for organ. She has a piano sonata and string music. And Schreimer Publishing has just got the rights to publish her work. So now her work can be more accessible to the public. Before, I believe, it was University of Arkansas that was kind of curating her work or keeping it alive. But there's just like limitations that the university press had. And so Schreimer is now able to put that work out and make it available.
So they're her new publisher. They own the rights to her music now, or how's
that working?
I don't
know if it's about owning the rights, but they are publishing it and is putting it back out to the public in a way that would have been harder to gain access to solely through the university that was collecting her work. She's been dead for a while, so and that's another.
But they're keeping her work alive.
Yeah, they're keeping her work alive. But also, one of the scholars, well, the scholar who was like the foremost scholar on her work, was a black professor, and she has passed within the last year. So when you look around, when you go to universities, you don't really see a lot of us in those higher level positions. And we need to be there, because if we're not there, then our stories is not there.
That's a really good point. And that's something that, that's a constant conversation that I think everyone is having these days when it comes to authenticity and storytelling. It's important for those who represent an experience that they're able to create the narrative and be an active, at least an active body when it comes to editing what is in that narrative, if they're not the ones creating the narrative.
If you're doing a PhD program as a black person from South LA, or what used to be termed South Central, if you happen to make it that far, you can add something to the body of knowledge to further that field that somebody white who just heard about something, economic activity that they were interested in that area couldn't inform the world on, you know? And so that's what it's about. PhD programs are more than just having somebody call you doctor. It's really about the research that you do, and the research you do should inform the world in a way that helps further that field that you're in and adds to the body of knowledge. And if you come from, you know, maybe a single parent and you had to use food stamps as a child growing up to survive, and you were on assisted housing living or whatever it may be, you're going to have a different, you're going to be differently informed about how you approach your work than somebody who hasn't that. And we see right now that economic policies, a lot of the people that are in leadership who have a say have not ever sat in a classroom by a black professor, you know, who may have been at the, you know, an authority in some area of some discipline in education. So that's important. And if we don't have it in music, and we don't have it in sociology, and we don't have it in medicine, then you will continue to see where we are left behind or not thought of or not included or not made mention. And education is more than just obtaining a degree to get ahead, because educational systems have leadership components, and they have, you know, the classroom professor component, there's the research component, and so our voices have to be heard in all these areas, because what is done does have an impact on how policies are made, how programs are supported, and we need to be there to have a say.
Well, thank you very much, Ontario. I truly enjoyed this conversation with you for this week's edition of the blog Music Art Culture. It was very informative, always enlightening, and a pleasure to have such an intellectual as yourself who's just so well-versed, not only in education, but also when it comes to music education as well. So thank you for sitting down with me and my listening audience. And one last question before I let you go. If you could be an animal, which one would you be?
I would be the badass golden eagle.
The golden eagle. And why? Why is the golden eagle badass? And why do you want to be the golden eagle?
Top predator. And they fly above everyone else.
Well, there you have it. Thank you for listening to the blog Music Art Culture. I'm your host, Dominique, and our special guest, Ontario. Sign off for us.
It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the blog Music Art Culture. For more info on today's guest, go to musicartculture.org. Click the contact page and send us an email. Until next time.